Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, a podcast. My name is Patrick, and I am joined, as sometimes, by Doug.
It should be as always, but those other guys have a stranglehold on your balls.
They do, and
they're like, don't let Doug do a podcast. It's too good.
Right. They're like, I want to talk about Vanilla Sky. Do not let that guy say two words about Vanilla Sky.
Speaking of Vanilla Sky
is mine.
Anyway,
go ahead. Do you want to weigh in on Vanilla Sky?
Real quick, I would like to weigh in on Abre los Ojos because right. I am the douchiest podcaster around. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks
for coming. I appreciate
it.
It's great to be here with all you fine folks out there. I'm talking to you, John Petrilla.
This is your first time in studio in quite some time.
It has been.
We've been Skyping.
Skype is great, and I appreciate Skype.
Skyping, by the way, is code for touching butts.
We've been snoodling, which is just touching the tips of our penises together. Skype is great. It's great technology. But there really is nothing like being in the same room with this man.
It's nice to look into your eyes.
You radiate a warmth. There's a halo effect around you.
It's good that I radiate a warmth.
I think it turns out
the studio is very cold.
I think there's something medically wrong with you, is what I'm saying. I would like to say, wow, it's really nice being near you. But frankly, it's uncomfortable.
My hair is falling out.
I cry when I see a tree.
You are listening to F This Movie, which you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com. And on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, and on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie, and at DVD Verdict at DVD Verdict Presents.
And pretty soon, I think we should shit or get off the shitter.
All right.
There will be a shortened website out there. There has to be.
We have to get like an fthismovie.com. But probably not a .com.
We're going to get there soon. So it's easier for you folks.
Because of douches.
Right. Because assholes be assholing all up in our asshole.
Doug.
Yes.
You're familiar with the F This Movie Twitter.
Yes.
Real quick, hit me with a tweet.
A tweet?
Yeah, like a sample F This Movie tweet.
One of my tweets from last week, snap into a casket.
Referring, of course, to Randy Macho Man Savage.
I figured, what else do I need to say? It's like, R.I.P. Macho Man.
Next to the lovely Miss Elizabeth.
By the way, that's so douchey. There's a thing on Facebook, and we've talked about this before, on Facebook or Twitter, obviously, too, although Facebook, it's way more egregious, where as soon as someone dies or any sort of news event happens, people just have to, like, scramble to their computers and type...
R.I.P. Macho Man. Leslie Nielsen, that's what I was thinking of. All of a sudden, he was beloved by everyone. My childhood is over. Leslie Nielsen, Mr. Magoo is gone.
I almost said Leslie Mann. Like, R.I.P.
She is very much alive.
But I'm assuming she's
not pooping in that body switching trailer. Which, do you think she wants to put a gun to her head every time she sees that trailer and they've added fart sound effects?
I think so.
What is that movie called? The Change Up?
I forgot, although it was featured in Watching Trailers with Doug.
Yes, it was. Another feature that you can find every Friday at fthismovie.blogspot.com.
I wrote about that. I watched it probably 3 or 4 times. I don't remember the name of that movie.
Real quick, it's
The Change-Up.
I just put this together. You're the Doug from Watching Trailers with Doug?
Listen, I don't want to brag. It's not something I wear on my sleeve. It's just something I do.
It's something I wear on my chest.
But yeah, so like R.I.P. Leslie Nielsen. By the way, I think it's Leslie Mann. I would assume it's not Leslie. That sounds more masculine.
Yeah, you're right. I say Leslie though for women too.
I just got chastised. I had a friend whose older sister was Leslie, and I said Leslie, and the family yelled at me.
Well, they need to lighten up. Macho Man is gone. May he rest in peace. He, of course, played Bonesaw in Spider-Man. Bonesaw is ready. So that's the connection to movies. I'm trying to tie it back.
I understand. I think that the point you want to make is the Twitter. Go there for some news, obviously. Mm-hmm. Although we try not to post just the same casting garbage for the Hunger Games. Or whatever.
Like, look, the new picture of Bane, although I'm pretty sure you tweeted that. But that's newsworthy.
I don't even know who Bane is. Have you heard of Conrad Bane? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Mr. D?
The Tom Hardy character from... I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But no, I try to just make irreverent comments and
irreverence
call people out.
Is like your bag, man.
And I try to lure people in with
our
shortened hyperlinks.
Yeah.
And then you'll be
I can't read what this is from the link. I have to click on it.
You got to click on it, and then you're taken to our world.
That's right.
In which we make you take off your jacket, sit down in a chair, and take off your pants.
What?
Take off your pants.
I really thought that was going a different way.
But yeah, that's Twitter. Check it out. Check it out.
Tonight we're talking about The Princess Bride.
But before we do that, Patrick, what have you seen lately?
Whoa, thank you.
See?
I saw Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, but I probably won't talk about it that much because I wrote a review of it, which you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com. I will say it was disappointing, and I have liked all of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. In fact, I rewatched the first three in preparation for the sequel.
Why is it called On Stranger Tides? It's about the Fountain of Youth, right?
Because it's based on a like a book that has nothing to do with the Pirates of the Caribbean series, but they just bought a book so that their work would be easier. And the book is called On Stranger Tides.
That's so weird.
It's really dumb.
Because it'd just be like, call it Pirates of the Caribbean, right. The Fountain of Youth.
Right.
Because that's just as, like, fantastical and, you know, right. as On Stranger Tides. All the titles have been pretty bad, I think.
Agreed.
Dead Man's Chest. Is that one of them?
Yes, that's the second one.
Curse of the Jade Scorpion,
The Jade Scorpion is the first one.
I think that's
one.
The first one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
If I am mistaken, email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And what's the other one? The other one's even more forgettable.
The third one is Fast Five.
The third one is absolutely...
Pirates of the Caribbean, Fast Five.
Final Destination 5. By the way...
Five Null Destination.
There should only be one
which is what that movie should have been called.
Five Null Destination? Yes. I love it. There's only one fifth movie, and that fifth movie should be Fast Five.
Agreed.
Because really, Final Destination 5, it's like, they're going to kill you. I've seen this now, whatever.
But probably in 3D, because that's what they did in the fourth one.
Was there a Saw 5?
Dude, there's a Saw 7.
Is there really?
Yep.
I haven't seen, I know you've done a podcast on all the Saws, or just...
Up until 7, because it wasn't out yet.
I have not seen one Saw, and I kind of don't... I don't think I should at this point.
No, you're fine.
Like, I think my nieces are doing that work for me. You know, like, they love that movie.
You're fine if you don't see them, but the podcast that we did, you know, we watched the first six, and then we're like, the Saw, there's something interesting to be said about the Saw movies, and, like, they shouldn't totally be written off. And then the seventh one came out, and it was just an abortion, and it made me regret everything I'd said about the first six. So
this was a podcast that was also not done with me, which was probably a mistake. Probably
correct. Absolutely. I okay. should have done a podcast on all the Saw movies with you, having not seen any of the
Saw
movies.
We'll just do a podcast on Human Centipede and just call it the podcast on Saw. And right. then we'll just cover all the bases.
I like it. Besides Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, which I do not recommend, unfortunately,
That does suck, because you want the summer to be fun and just like...
You do, and I like those movies, man. I get excited about them, and it was a big disappointment. And summer so far has actually been pretty good. Fast Five was enjoyable, Thor was enjoyable, Bridesmaids was enjoyable. None of them were perfect
movies.
Well,
that's what you want Pirates of the Caribbean to be.
Right, just enjoyable.
Just enjoyable.
And it was not.
I get annoyed on the news or whenever, just any sort of entertainment show, they talk about how... Whatever the movie that's coming out is, it's like, summer has officially began. Yeah, right. And it's like, we've been saying that for a month when Fast Five came out.
I'm going to say it in August.
Right. Summer is here.
Conan comes out.
Oh, God. You want to see that, don't you?
I will see it. I don't know if I... That's not quite the same as wanting to see it, but I totally will see it.
If it's really boring, will you fall asleep in the movie, or will you go to sleep in the movie?
It's hard to say. Hard to say. So the other movie that I watched recently was on Netflix Instant. Mm. I watched the movie Super with Michael Rapaport.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
Which we saw the trailer for, like, years ago. Yeah. And were very intrigued by. And then the movie kind of went away. And it's been on my Netflix instant queue for probably 2 years.
Let me just, if I'm on the same page, it's the movie where Michael Rapaport...
May or may not have superpowers.
Right, and he thinks he's a hero and has all these powers, but everyone else thinks he's kind of crazy.
Right.
And I thought that was such a great... And, of course, based on the two-minute trailer, like, such a great concept.
Right. It's a very frustrating movie. Oh, okay. It's not totally bad, but it's like every time it would start to be interesting or kind of different, it wouldn't work all the way. So it's like, you know, it's an interesting failure, which I'm always a fan of. For a little while, I was actually really annoyed by it, and it's not the movie's fault because it came out a couple years ago. So it was very much at the front of the whole, like, normal guy pretending to be a superhero.
Okay. Which is now
Wave, which is right, kick ass and super and defender right. So when it was that movie for a little while, I was bummed out, but it changes as it goes. And it's certainly made by people with talent. It has like sort of a weird sad tone, and there's interesting things going on in it. I don't think it totally works, but I think I would still almost recommend it, like, to some people. I wouldn't say everyone,
to me,
but
probably.
As a curiosity, it's like 80 minutes.
It's on Netflix Instant, so I could definitely watch that tonight or something.
And it's interesting. I don't think it works, but it's worth seeing, I think.
When I saw the preview for that, and again, I have not seen this, but I was definitely intrigued by all the things you're mentioning, like how this to not make it so fantastical, but just to have this guy, he could either be really mentally disturbed or could actually
see. Then the movie very much makes it clear
that it's one
early
or the other.
On one or the other, okay. And so then you're just watching a variation on the same scene. He thinks one thing, but everyone else knows this other thing, and so it's like,
gotcha.
I almost would have preferred it had been more ambiguous.
Yeah, and I think that you correct me if I'm wrong, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Unbreakable in that it's the normal, well,
in that Samuel Jackson plays Mr. Glass, and it ends with just a scroll of text, like an episode of Cops, and ruins everything that you liked that came before it.
Okay, let me clarify.
All right.
It's very slow. My preconceived notion of Super in that, like, I want it to be this certain movie where it's a real person in the real world. Like, how would a superhero in the real world not...
Right.
The newer Super and Kick-Ass are kind of explore that a little bit, but they're still
very... Wait, did I say it was called Super? It's called Special.
Oh.
The movie is called Special.
What the fuck?
I'm very sorry I called it Super this whole time.
Yeah, you were calling
it Super. I almost want to go back and erase this whole conversation, but I'm not going to.
Yeah,
no.
Good.
The movie is called Special.
Okay.
Good Lord. And the reason it's called Special is because, like, that's the drug that he starts taking.
Oh, that's so dumb. I loved it more when it was just like he was convinced he had powers and people were convinced
he was
crazy.
He starts taking an experimental drug. And again, the movie tips that. I'm not giving anything away because the opening credits, it says Special, and then right underneath it gives the long pharmaceutical name for a drug.
Okay.
And you realize that...
What's up?
The movie is not called Super. The movie is called Special.
God damn it. So okay.
Super is great, by the way. Everybody sees Super.
So Special, though. Okay, let's talk about Special.
This
is
so embarrassing.
We're so fucking, like, invalidated ourselves.
Because anybody who's listening to this who knew that I was wrong very early listened for 5 minutes. Like, are you idiots? What are you saying?
That is, they're definitely...
You do not deserve to be...
Go back and put a coda in. Like, by the way,
yeah.
We correct the you know, something
before
like that.
Before you turn this off and put on Slash Filmcast. By the way, those guys get things wrong too, okay? They're not perfect,
It sucks? Is that what you're saying about the podcast?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying nobody's... I'm saying Pobody's nerfed, is what I'm saying.
My point in comparing it to Unbreakable is more so my preconceived notion about Special in that it's a real person in the real world and how Unbreakable, a very flawed movie, but still one of M. Night... Shyamalan's best, if
you can
say that and Sixth Sense are his best movies, and Signs, I guess. It worked in a lot of ways, and in some ways it didn't work. But I like that concept or that story approach.
Right. What have you seen lately?
I have not seen anything.
Please get the titles wrong.
Of value. I saw... I've been watching a lot of repeats of the Queen's or the Marriage of the Royals. I've been watching that. I've been watching Prince what's his name marry the girl from the other part of the country.
Yeah,
the
Prince and Me. With
the Prince,
Julia Stiles.
The Prince and Me. The Princess. It's the version of the Disney thing.
Princess Diaries.
Except the frog, and except the princess is black.
And a frog.
Yeah, and a frog's in
like
it.
Like a black frog.
A black frog.
The Black Frog Princess is what
I believe.
It's
yes. Oh, you saw it too then.
Yeah.
No, I saw, in all honesty, I have not seen too much lately. There's been a lot on my plate.
Sure.
I mentioned about buying a grill.
There's a grill involved, which you can read about in Watching Trailers with Doug.
No, I've actually been watching, this podcast obviously is based out of Chicago. I've been watching a lot of Chicago Bulls playoff games, which is so lame.
You've got
this
playoff
fever.
This is
not Sportscast. This is not Bulls cast. This is a film, what is this called again?
I don't remember.
F This Movie Cast.
I think it's called Special.
Special Cast. And it's not about sports, but I do like the Bulls, and I've been watching a lot of that, which has gotten in the way of some of my movie watching. But I did see The Inside Job, which is the most frustrating, just angering.
Sexy.
It does. There's very few sex scenes. No sex scenes. I saw The Inside Job. It's a very frustrating, very angering documentary about the bubble burst in 2008 and the economic collapse.
Which everybody should see.
Absolutely. Well,
better informed and angry.
It won the Oscar for Best Documentary.
That's right.
And it's really good. And it actually does a pretty good job of presenting a very complex situation and many factors and scenarios and very complex terminology that I don't understand. It presents it fairly straightforward. There's still a little confusion, but you kind of understand still what it's trying to say. And
right.
At the end of it, it's just so like... well, I guess we're fucked, is just like how...
Pretty much.
It's kind of like watching The Daily Show, and it's like, wow, this is so funny. I so wish I didn't watch this, because I'm more aware now of all this, like, hypocritical bullshit, and now I'm more angry than I was before.
But there's something comforting to me, especially with The Daily Show, but also with Inside Job, like, knowing that at least there are people out there who get it and who sort of see things the way that I do and are reporting on it.
I would hope so.
Exposing some of this stuff. It doesn't seem to be making a bit of difference.
Well, the whole thing with the Daily Show, and I love the Daily Show, and, you know, we're obviously not political here, but I do like that show. It's very entertaining. But it seems like every show is just them pointing out hypocrisy and pointing out how Fox News gets all these facts wrong. And the reality is nothing changes.
Right.
And I get that there is a comfort in that. And to bring it back to Inside Job, I do feel that way too, that this the maker of the film, he seems very informed. He kind of challenges people in a very smart way without being condescending like Michael Moore, without being kind of about himself like Morgan Spurlock. It's very interesting, but it's still just so frustrating. And then back to The Daily Show, I remember after I saw this, there was a little segment on The Daily Show about the woman in charge of the FCC who approved the Comcast-NBC merger. And she was, you know, changing all these rules and making sure this merger went through. And then the story that The Daily Show presented was that she was then quit the FCC and was offered a job as a VP at fucking Comcast. And it's like, this is a joke. It can't be going where my mind thinks it's going.
Right.
It can't. No, someone surely would stop this and say, wait a minute, that's a conflict. No, it's exactly what you think it is. So it made me very upset, but everyone should see it because you just got to prepare yourself and be in the right mindset and.
Right.
And I also saw It's Complicated, which made me very angry, and it was very...
Do you feel like It's Complicated should have been the title of Inside Job?
It's Complicated. It's Complicated is like the Inside Job of rom-coms. No, Shadia, my wife, saw like 5 seconds of a Steve Martin scene on HBO, and she's like, oh, we should tape this, and I'm like, I like Steve Martin, you know? And it wasn't, from what I heard, it wasn't panned, it wasn't like a horrible movie.
Right.
It was just a fine romantic comedy. And we taped it, or DVR'd it, and it's fine. It just is like the title is so like vanilla. The story. It's Meryl Streep, you know. It's like
I remember liking the performances, and it's Nancy Meyers who just is now. This is her wheelhouse. Like this is the movie she does, and she did a movie a couple years ago about adults. It's rare to get a romantic comedy about like grown human beings,
and that's good. Yeah, that's a. You know.
Like, they're not 22-year-olds who are like, when am I ever going to get married? Kate Hudson. so that's great. And she did a movie a couple years ago called Something's Gotta Give, an equally terrible title.
I don't even – you could name 10 titles like that. Right. I would not have any idea.
Right.
Just go with it. You know, all these, it's all the same.
They're all just generic, but you know it's a romantic
Something
comedy.
Something Borrowed. that's exactly right. If nothing else, it tells you that this is a romantic comedy. I guess I'm prepared for this.
Vague, indescript title must be a romantic comedy.
Right.
Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson. And that movie was surprisingly good.
Is that where she got – like she – shocking because
she – and that movie was surprisingly good. So I kind of had my hopes up about It's Complicated, actually. And I didn't really enjoy it.
There's a scene, it's the first scene in which Meryl Streep is acting, and Meryl Streep is a great actress, and it's understood, it's you know, it's kind of science fact that she's the best. And Alec Baldwin is fucking Jack Donaghy in every scene. I cannot separate him now from that.
Right.
And it just proves that he's not a great actor, or he's good at being this one character, and it's not about the acting. Because when he acts opposite her, it's like he's so making these faces and stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, and by the way, he's a giant gorilla in this movie, too. He is such a bear. He is so big and thick and just he like slaps his big belly and nothing moves. And I'm like, is that muscle or
it's
just
crazy to see
fat?
Like footage of him from like his younger, super handsome, like Hunt for Red October days. They're like, who? That's a different guy.
Right. And the funny thing, too, is without, you know, being too obnoxious right now, it's that he still is like a handsome guy.
Yeah,
it's just a totally different.
He's
like
a handsome actor.
He's an elder state. Yes, absolutely. He's the elder statesman, handsome actor, as opposed to the smarmy, swarthy, whatever.
But it bummed me out when I didn't like that movie because the response when I would tell people like I didn't really like that movie, it was always like, "Well, it's not for you.
Fuck that.
Like it's for women. It's for older women." But then I would always point to like Something's Gotta Give. Like, no, I think that's a good. I like that movie. So don't tell me like I can't appreciate this movie because I'm a boy.
Well, that's always the most annoying thing. It's that whenever there's something that's bad, and typically, I mean, a lot of romantic comedies are not great. I mean, they're fine. They're serviceable.
Right.
But and then you say like, oh, I just want it to be a little something more, just have something more to say, or just be a little more special, a little more earnest. because half the time they're starring Kate Hudson and they're just garbage. You know, right. It's failure right. to launch, or it's
more than half the time they're starring Kate Hudson. Yeah, oddly enough,
I think so.
Let's talk about The Princess Bride.
Okay. The Princess Bride is what we're going to talk about now.
That's right. We're talking about The Princess Bride. From 1987, directed by Rob Reiner.
You were only 5 when that came out.
Tell me about it.
I was 43.
Old. Okay, The Princess Bride is one of these, and I don't want to get into like...
directed by Rob Reiner, script by William Goldman.
I don't necessarily want to tell, like, the backstory for every movie, but The Princess Bride for me is at least a little bit interesting.
Isn't that the point of this I mean, not, like, to say that the
I
point
guess,
of this podcast
is but I don't always want to be like, here's my experience the first time I saw The Princess
Bride. But, like, we're not going to say anything new about The Princess Bride.
Oh, I am.
Oh, snap.
Which is that it's anti-Semitic. I saw The Princess Bride when I was 10 years old, and it was one of these movies that was playing at the theater down the street from my house. I had no interest in seeing it. It was called The Princess Bride. There was not a single actor in it that I recognized, with the exception of Andre the Giant, because I was into WWF at
the time. What about Wallace Shawn?
I knew Wally Shawn, but there really was nobody that I knew. I knew Andre the Giant. That was it. And he's not even why I wanted to see it. The reason I went to see it was because it was rated PG, and it was down the street from my house, and I could get in.
Right.
So I went on a Sunday afternoon, and my mind was blown, because I loved this movie so much. And for years, that was the movie that I pointed to as my favorite movie. So it's just an example of, like, it's one of these happy surprises that I had no interest in seeing, but just completely fell in love with. And I watched it every couple of years. It's been a long time since I've seen it. And I think going into talking about doing this for a podcast, like, you had suggested we do The Princess Bride, and I think you were possibly applying, what a listener of ours, Dawn Hunt, coined as the Goonies derivation, which is when we did the Goonies. By the way, thank you for that.
Thank you, Don.
We did a podcast on the Goonies 6, 8, 10, 12 months ago, and talked about how it was this movie that we loved as kids, and does it hold up as an adult?
Right.
And I say no.
And to apply the Goonies derivation, and I think what's interesting about the comparison too is that my fondness for the Goonies was, I think, even from early on, was way more intense than your fondness for the Goonies. Like, you liked the Goonies as a kid, but
I liked it a lot.
I really, really liked it.
I packed the novelization in my runaway backpack. That was, like, the only possession I was going to take with me.
And my take on The Princess Bride was like, yeah, it's fine. Okay. But I there was an element of me, and the reason I think I brought this up even for the prospect of a podcast was that I don't understand...
Prospcast.
Prospcast. I can't, like... I get why people love it so much, but okay. I don't get the, like, I was, okay, just to jump ahead a little bit, I went online today.
Yes.
And I looked for negative reviews.
Okay.
It was just a little experiment I did, because you go on Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic or whatever, Metacritic, on Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, it's, I want to say it's like 98% fresh, and Metacritic is like, most of the reviews, a vast majority are very positive for this movie. And the few negative reviews are not even that bad. They're just very kind of like, it doesn't quite work, is this, or that I don't really buy the relationship here. Very kind of benign opinions, you know, nothing that's shocking. But under their, especially specifically in Rotten Tomatoes, under those negative reviews, you can comment. And the comments are border between funny, like, rejection, like, inconceivable was one, which is a very funny response to a negative criticism. To, like, you have no business, your website's a joke, F you, you're the worst critic I've ever seen.
People are super passionate about The Princess Bride, and I love it, and I still love it, and I'm not necessarily one of these people who's super passionate about it, so don't think that I'm being that guy.
Please,
be that
guy.
It's not Back to the Future when I say that the people who don't like it, or the critics who give it a bad review, I honestly think are wrong. Like, I think there's a reason why it has almost a perfect rating.
Okay.
Because I just think there's nothing wrong with the movie. It's fine if you saw it and you're like, oh, I could take it or leave it.
And that's probably where I'm coming from now.
But you don't necessarily have criticisms of it, correct? It's just like, for some reason, it didn't connect with me.
You know what? You're right.
But you can't point to something and say it doesn't work. Because, man, that movie works.
Because if nothing else, I think more of my response to it now, and again, here we are in our 70s, talking about a movie that came out 50
years
ago.
In our hundreds.
it's it's not the movie anymore that I take issue with. It's more about
the crazy,
the fervor.
You're wrong for not liking it.
And it's, I remember, you know, way back when talking about music with you in high school and stuff, and how there were Tori Amos fans that were just like, would beat you over the head and just like, Tori Amos is the best and you have to listen to her. She's so talented and so great. And it's like, whoa, calm down. I don't even know who this person is.
Right.
But before I can even form an opinion,
cutting your arms.
You're browbeating me. And the same is true for even Dave Matthews fans. Dave Matthews is a fine musician. I don't like his music, but the people that do are so obsessively frothy about it that it's just like, I can't, okay, now I'm even kind of stepping back the other direction. I don't like it because of their insistence that I must, or I don't know anything. So that's even my response to Princess Bride now. It's a fine movie. And I'll kind of jump to my point. If my only criticism of the movie is that I find it a little boring.
Really?
Okay. I do. I honestly, watching it
this weekend, that's insane to me.
I almost fell asleep.
Oh, wow.
I was like and I wasn't even that tired, but I'm like on my sofa and I'm watching this and I'm just like, I kind of know where this is going. And I get distracted by something, probably a dog with a fluffy tail. And then all of a sudden, before I know it, like, my eyes were closed for 5 seconds, and I'm like, oh, shit, you know, I gotta, like, wake up, and I repositioned and sat up and did some crystal meth, and I was good to go for, like, 3 days, and I've been flying ever since, so. So that's my one critique. I find it kind of boring.
Okay.
Okay.
Prepare to be flamed in the comments on fthismovie.blogspot.com or facebook.com/fthismovie.
Or twitter.com/fthismovie, if there were comments.
I think it's such a crazy, special movie in that, like, so much of it shouldn't have worked. It's based, I just think, like, it's based,
everything about it though is made to work. Like, it's a preset formula that's like, it can't fail.
I disagree. I see what you're saying, and it has all these elements very deliberately built in that should work. There's 100 examples of that movie that don't work. And this one does. And the reason I say it shouldn't have is because, I mean, Rob Reiner was fairly untested. This was only like his third movie, you know, and it doesn't have a ton in common with Spinal Tap or The Sure Thing necessarily. This was when Rob Reiner was still awesome.
He did Stand By Me before, or was that after this?
I mean, Stand By Me, shit.
I want to say it's 86.
Yeah, I do too, but I feel like this was already...
Maybe.
He was signed on to do this before. Maybe.
Based on
like the special features and stuff on the DVD, he talks about how he had only made 2 movies before signing on to do Princess Bride.
Look at you doing some show prep.
That's how I do. But I do think you're right about Stand By Me coming out before this. It has no major stars.
I'll take my minor victories where I can get
it. It has no major stars in it, you know? It's like not easily marketable necessarily, even in the 1980s when fantasy and this kind of stuff was much more popular than it is now.
Right.
So I just think it shouldn't have worked because it tries to do so much for the reasons you're saying. I mean, it tries to be this fairy tale that's kind of making fun of fairy tales, and it's funny, but it's also like an adventure movie. And I really think, like, watching it again, I'm like, man, this movie has everything. And that's by design.
Not everything. Robin Wright.
It doesn't have nudity. You're absolutely right.
Top off.
But it
Which
really
would have made this movie so much better.
It's completely by design that the movie has everything, like you said. I mean, it's a movie about having everything, you know, like it's designed, it's structured so that it has all this stuff. That's sort of part of the joke of the movie. But I think all of those things work. And when we talked about like seeing it, it's just a rare movie that you could see as a kid and as an adult, and it still works. And it's, you know, they compare it to The Wizard of Oz on the special features on the DVD. And that's pushing it a little because The Wizard of Oz, in addition to being like a great movie, is also like completely groundbreaking. It has all these like iconic images and characters, and The Princess Bride doesn't necessarily have that. But it is the kind of movie that like you can see it as a 5-year-old or as a 40-year-old, and it still totally works. Not just in a way that's playing to your nostalgia for the movie.
Sure. I find the movie to be enjoyable and entertaining. And again, my critique of this movie is not, I'm not, in fact, I didn't approach this as I was going to be this one side of it and like defend it. In fact, I watched it and there's certain things that like I find very charming and very endearing. But ultimately, like I said, it's kind of like it falls flat for me. And I think that, and I've said this before on different podcasts, I'm not a huge fan of fantasy, and I know that this isn't so much, it's not really fantasy, so it's like more historical, you know, kind of like a Robin Hood type era. so basically my personal opinions are like, I don't like fantasy. I don't like this kind of like this scope, mm-hmm. the sweep of the movie. It's just not my cup of tea. In fact, I kind of like the Inigo Montoya character even more than, I mean, I think that's almost by design also, that he's like this kind of mysterious, swashbuckling, out for revenge type person. And I'm like, that'd be an interesting movie just about him almost, you know, because there's so much there, I think. And that's what you said, like the movie is just jam-packed wall to wall with these kinds of elements. Earlier this year, not too long ago, what's the movie that just came out about?
Fast Five.
How High.
Oh, yeah.
Or Your what? Highness.
Your Highness.
How High. Jeez. I know it's some pot comedy. Your Highness came
high
out.
High in it.
Right. Your Highness came out, and it was supposed to, it had promise.
Yeah.
You know, because of it's starring, what's his name, that's, you know, really funny, and I really do find him funny. What's his name? I can't think of his name. You're staring at me blankly.
I'm completely
the guy from Eastbound and Down. Yeah. I can't think of his name. Kenny Powers. No, that's his fake name. What the hell? We are pathetic. I think his name is Super. Listen, that guy from. Do you want to pause it and look it up? Don't pause it. Let's just plow forward. So basically, Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down is in How High or Your Highness, and the fact is, I was very intrigued and very. You know, excited about the prospect of watching this movie starring a very funny comic with some, you know, like a two Oscar, one Oscar winning, one Oscar nominated, like these respected actors and actresses, and kind of turning this genre film on its end and making it rated R and having, like, you know, obviously references to drug use, but also nudity and swearing and just really irreverent. And I saw the preview, it had to be like end of last year, even earlier this year, was like, wow, this could be really, really funny. It's like, I haven't seen a movie like this because obviously the culture in Hollywood right now is so different than 1987, where you can't make a movie about, like, unless it's a grand epic, you know, with battles and CGI, you really can't make a small fantasy movie anymore. And I'm like, wow, this is great. And it turns out, and this is my long rant, and I apologize, Your Highness is a piece of garbage. I did not like it at all. Patrick, I know you liked it more than I did, but I saw it, I was so disappointed. And again, my biggest critique of Your Highness was I was bored. Yeah. I'm just like, this is boring. I know every beat. I know where this is going. I know exactly how this is going to end. And the whole thing with Princess Bride is that love endures. Love is the strongest thing. It's a line from Moulin Rouge. It's you know, it's, I know that they're going to end up together. And I know that he's going to kill the guy with the six fingers. And I know that...
Right. But Danny McBride, by the way, is the guy's name.
Danny McBride.
Isn't, you could say that of every movie, almost.
Almost, but I think...
And actually, The Princess Bride, I think, more than a lot of movies, throws a few curveballs. Like the fact that they kill him, Wesley halfway through the movie. Obviously, you know...
Well, right.
Okay, he's probably not going to be dead, but what other movie does that even, you know, and makes you wonder, okay, how are they going to get around this particular obstacle?
I'll tell you how they get around it. With
Miracle Max?
With hilarious cameos, yeah, by Carol Kane. And that's part of it, too, and again, I don't want to... My reaction to the movie is a lot based on people's reaction to the movie. And
sure.
Again, like, I find the movie very charming and very fine, and I have nothing bad to say about the movie. Mm-hmm. But then when people say, and I read reviews and commentary about this, like, how that's Billy Crystal is the funniest, gut-busting laughter with this Miracle Max scene, and I'm watching this, and I know that it's dated. I know that, obviously, that shtick, you know, 25 years later doesn't really play that well. But it falls so flat, or other parts of it seem forced, and it's just not funny to me. But it's, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's,
yeah, and I don't necessarily, you know, that scene doesn't crack me up.
Was that the scene for the parents? Of
memorable.
The,
I don't know.
Like, I think that the obviously it's PG movie,
right,
for kids, and that's the scene.
But
like,
well, I don't see, and I don't think it was. I don't think the movie is just for kids. You know, I really do think it's a movie that is really geared towards everybody, because there are a lot of jokes in there. And I don't mean like they're adult themed, but just they're a lot more, a lot of the jokes are way more subtle than what's in the Billy Crystal scene, especially, which is certainly not subtle. But
it's
also
so broad,
yeah,
and
I mean, it's crazy broad. Yeah. But like Rob Reiner now, man, he is incapable of doing a subtle joke. Right. Like everything has flashing lights around it. And it's amazing to me to watch him be awesome in his early days and just be confident in the material and get, I mean, I really think every character in the movie is memorable, like, in a big, you know, and part of it, again, is because they're these big, broad sort of archetypes, you know, but it's so well cast with people who you didn't know. Cary Elwes, I think, is really great in the movie. Has never been good in anything since. Has been
no strings attached. Hello.
Has been aggressively bad in a lot of things. Yeah. But I think he's really good in this. Mandy Patinkin, obviously, who's better known for his singing now than for his acting. But
I remember him. It's funny. Aside from this movie, I remember him from Chicago Hope.
Right. He's been on a couple. I think he's on one of those like CSI shows.
I think he actually just quit it because it was. Okay. I read
Criminal
this.
Criminal Minds. Or
something
I don't know
like
which
that.
One.
Where he was. He said the show was too violent. He wanted it not be.
No
and
kidding.
It's like, that's yeah, cool. Like, right. I respect that.
Yeah. And Andre the Giant and Wallace Shawn. I mean, all these people, they're so like larger than life and they're so good in their parts. But so is Chris Sarandon and so is Christopher Guest, who for the longest time, because as a kid, I had no idea what Spinal Tap was.
Right.
It was amazing to me to find out that the bad guy from Princess Bride was like this comedian
right.
who was better known for like being funny than being this evil bastard in The Princess Bride, the Six-Fingered Man.
Some more backstory for me too is I did not see the movie in the theater when mm-hmm. I was a kid.
Not a lot of people did, it turns out.
Yeah, I think it only made like $30 million on a $15 million budget,
yeah,
which only
so
$30 million, let's not
But it's
ourselves.
One of these movies that really found life on like cable, you know.
But when it first came out, obviously, it was not that successful. I did not see it when it first came out theatrically. In fact, it must have been a couple years until it was on video or at some sleepover party or something like that when I was a kid and I saw it. And it was fine, and I remember thinking, like, oh, that's a funny movie, and, like, I feel like I was understanding some of the adult, again, not, mm-hmm. it's not adult humor, it's just more mature humor.
Right.
Even that sounds dirty. I don't mean that to sound dirty. I just mean,
it's just
like,
a joke that a kid went, Chris Sarandon, talking about, like, I've got my wife's murder to plan and Gilda to blame for it. I'm swamped.
Right.
Like, it's a funny line that he doesn't oversell, and as a kid, you may not even realize
right.
that that's funny.
Right. So I did not see it within the same context. And because I saw it probably piecemeal at, you know, on video and stuff like that, I do not have the affection towards it also, and did not even know, like you said, like Christopher Guest was the villain in that. I'm like, who? I don't mm-hmm. even know this. I knew Spinal Tap because my brother watched it like 10 times a day for a couple years, but that's my backstory towards it, which I approach now and thinking, well, I'm a little more well-versed in movies, and I've, you know, I was, like, when I saw William Goldman, I kind of was shocked. I'm like, wow, he wrote that based on his novel. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, he wrote All the President's Men, which I just recently saw also. And what's the other one? Marathon Man, he wrote that, too, mm-hmm. which I also just recently saw. So
you're on,
like
a real – you should watch Dreamcatcher because he also wrote that, which is proof that both he and Rob Reiner have completely lost it.
Yeah, Rob Reiner, I was looking at his little resume. And
so solid for, like,
and even like the,
years.
I'll even, you know, forgive like the late or the early 90s because he did one of my not favorites.
Well,
by
listen,
any means,
he was
by
on,
any means
he
not
was
my
on
favorite.
Almost like a perfect streak, and I'm not saying he was making nothing but perfect movies, but he was on a great streak. And then he did North, and North threw him, but he bounced back because he did The American President
right.
after North,
which is North is bracketed by A Few Good Men, and I know you have your problems with that movie, but I really enjoyed that movie.
I count that as a solid like
as a success.
Yeah,
and then he made American President, which I really enjoy also.
Love that movie. Everything since then.
And then it's like
a disaster.
Right.
Everything.
What's the Michelle Pfeiffer movie that he
The Story of Us.
Yeah, just
every movie since The American President has been a huge, huge letdown.
And in fact, I think he's also become, because he also acts in a lot of stuff, he's become kind of a cartoon version of himself also. Like
right.
The,
and it's
kind of like neurotic, bald, fat guy.
And
know?
Even the way he sells jokes as an actor, that's the way he sells jokes in movies. And The Princess Bride has none of that.
No, it doesn't. And that's, I guess, you know, something in the plus column. It's funny, though, because you think that if this man, who obviously is a smart person, Rob Reiner is smart and successful, and he's made a lot of successful movies, and he's trusting these instincts now that are leading him in the wrong direction.
Right.
Like, so when he was younger, was it just luck? Was it or was it skill? I mean, I got to think it's skill, obviously. But, like, why is it now, when he's a success and doesn't need to make movies, that he chooses to make movies that are bad?
Right.
You know, like, back then he's probably a struggling director. I know his dad's Carl Reiner, and it's not like he's struggling ever. But, you know, he's probably trying to make a name for himself, trying to, like, carve himself out.
Well, he just seemed a little more willing to take risks. I mean, especially with something like The Princess Bride, like I said, by
right.
casting no stars, really.
Introducing Robin Wright. I saw that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the first thing.
She was on a soap opera. She was like 19 when they made
Guiding
that
Light. Yeah, that's right.
Santa Barbara.
Guiding Santa Barbara. What?
I just think it's, you know, part of the thing is too.
I think Danny McBride. Super.
Oh man, this podcast.
We're not prepared.
Listen, we're rusty. Okay, we've been Skyping.
I know. It's like, again, I'm just really uncomfortable sitting so close to you now.
Certainly, you know, I get that. Like, the Princess Bride definitely speaks to a lot of things that I respond to or that I like in a movie.
It's your kind of bag. It's
got all these elements that I love in a movie. But again, I have to applaud a movie that has all those elements and pulls, I think, every single one of them off successfully. I do think it's not completely conventional. It is in that it's the guy gets the girl.
No, I know what you're saying. It's very much
the hero's journey. But even having that last, he plays that last scene out, like, paralyzed from the neck down.
Right.
I think is great. You know, it's just offbeat enough. And as a kid, I didn't understand any of that.
Right.
I didn't necessarily know the way that the movie was sort of playing with form and these different traditions of fairy tales and all that stuff. I just took it all at face value, and the movie still worked so well for me. I was so caught up in the story. You want Inigo Montoya to get revenge for his dad. You want them to fall in love. You know, you just love every second of it. And as an adult, I still respond to all that stuff, but I'm appreciating more sort of how well done all of it is. I'm like standing outside of it a little more and appreciating, like, wow, they really put together something special here.
No, I think that, to your point, it's obviously based on this very traditional standard, you know, fairy tale plot.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got the hero and the girl and the damsel in distress, and you've got the wicked king, and, you know, all these elements that are very familiar. And what it does, it turns it on its head a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading more about even William Goldman's, like, book, and how it's because he's able to tell it from the story of the flashback, or the story, I guess, with Peter Falk and Fred Savage. By the way, in Chicago,
Chicago, which is that's got to be William Goldman. I mean, I don't know for sure, but William Goldman's from Chicago and a huge Chicago sports fan. And
but it's funny because every, like, it's like, oh, it's Chicago because he's wearing the Bears shirt, the Fridge poster, the Cubs pennant, the Sox cap, it's
Cheetos,
like,
bag.
It's Cheetos, Chicago Cheetos. Everything about that room is Chicago, and it's just like kind of shocked. I'm happy about it, but
hot
it's like
dogs, thumbtack to the wall.
That's right. But it's also like, wow, that's crazy.
Bullet holes everywhere.
But because it's told from the story, like, of Peter Falk, and even casting Peter Falk as the grandfather is kind of edgy and, like, a little different. It's able to comment on it in the structure of the movie.
Right.
You know, like, it's not just a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale told from the sarcastic grandfather.
Right. And it's very much, again, a movie that's about storytelling. It's about, you know, the way that stories are constructed and telling a story. By the way, I love that wraparound stuff. I love it. I really like Peter Falk's performance.
Yeah, no, he's
great. Certainly an aspect that, like, there's where I think some nostalgia creeps in, even as an adult now watching it, because I just love the premise that, like, he's homesick from school.
Yeah, no, that's great.
And his grandpa comes to read him a story. I think they have a little arc together.
It's very Goonies-esque in that respect, too, because it's like, it's summer, and it's like school's, the summer's ending, and they have to do this adventure before. It's like a similar way of him being homesick. It's like, we were all there as a kid at that time, at that age.
And I love their little arc, and I think their last scene together is so moving. I love it. And I think they interject at all the right points, and I love the way that Fred Savage starts to get, like, nervous and scared at different times. And I think all the interjections work, whether for comedy or for just breaking up the pace or whatever. I think all that stuff is really, really well handled. I don't mean to, like, completely gush over the movie, but...
Well, it's become a fucking love fest, so I hope you're happy.
And I do love the movie, even though I'm not one of these people who runs around just championing The Princess Bride to everyone, and I would never shout down somebody.
Well, that's more my issue with it, and again, the movie is fine.
Which I get, because I'm the same way. Like, there are certainly movies that people will tell me, you know...
Well, it's the same thing. I remember we talked about
Caddyshack. People are like, you don't love Caddyshack. I'm just like, Caddyshack's fine. I just don't care. But, like, how can you not love Caddyshack?
There was a thing you mentioned about Goonies where you just got so annoyed with people.
Yeah.
When people would be like, Rocky Road, or hey, you guys, and they, like, you'd mention Goonies, and the first thing out of their mouth would be this quote from
the worst thing about Goonies,
Sloth, you know, and it's like, oh no, that's not, and this is not, by no means is this the worst thing about Princess Bride, but, like, I remember thinking when I was a kid, it's like, anyone want a peanut? It's the Andre the Giant's little affect that he rhymes everything, which, by the way, goes away.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever, you know, it just goes away. But it's like, anybody want a peanut? It's like, oh, you're that guy that's going to, like, remember that one line. It's like, that's in the trailer, I assume, and, you know, or the Inigo Montoya speech, you know, and actually I kind of think that's pretty awesome. I love that. And that's why I like, I really like the Inigo Montoya character. But you know, it's funny, even when, the Man in Black, Cary Elwes, I guess some spoilers, although I think everyone on the planet seen Princess Bride, he is the, Cary Elwes is the stable boy who the princess falls in love with and he's taken away to a ship or, you know, he's a pirate captures him or something. And then she, after years of mourning, decides to, actually, I don't think she has a choice, is set up to marry the prince who will soon be king. She doesn't love him. It's Chris Sarandon, who plays a gay guy in Dog Day Afternoon.
And kind of a gay guy in Princess Bride. No, he's just, he's great, though.
That was Susan Sarandon's husband, right? That's, and she's kept his name.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was, they were married. That was their first marriage. And she's kept his name. And it's like, that's crazy that he's.
Good for him. He's also like, Jerry Dandridge in Fright Night, which is an awesome movie.
So. Which I heard they're remaking Fright
Night. Oh, they sure are. Oh, the trailer is now available, and it's horrible. So
maybe I'll watch in that with you.
You should, because it's so disappointing as somebody who really likes Fright Night.
Yeah. What was I saying?
Cary Elwes goes away.
Right, so I'm just getting to one specific point in the plot, is that, so then the Wallace Shawn and his band of, you know, Fezzik, Andre the Giant, and Inigo Montoya kidnap the princess while she's out on a jog, or a horse jog, that's what they're called, right? Horse jogs?
I'm going out for a horse jog.
And then there's a ship behind them. It's this man in black, and he's coming up to capture, you know, like, and he defeats them one by one. And that sword scene, by the way, is pretty great.
And that's all them doing the fencing. I love that whole sequence. I mean, I love the way that, like...
Oh, that's one of the best... I think probably, I would argue, the best sequence in the movie. Like, I'm also right-handed, you know?
But the scene with him and Wallace Shawn two scenes later is great, too. I mean, it's so funny. I think it's so funny.
So then it finally... The man in black catches up and through a series of, you know, different challenges defeats each one of the three to get to the princess. And then he treats her kind of badly and she treats him badly. And then they're having their little spat. He doesn't reveal who he is.
Well, she treats him badly because she thinks he's a pirate and he treats her badly.
He's trying to get information or he's trying to determine if she in fact loves him. But
when
he falls off the rolls down the mountain, he's like, as you wish. And it's like, oh, now they're.
Then she realizes right away. What have I done?
By the way, Westley.
Westley. Great though.
I just always annoy him. I'm just like, well, just reveal yourself right away. You know, like,
no, but it's, I love that. I love it. I do. And again, I think it's just different enough. And even as a kid, who hadn't seen a ton of movies yet and who didn't necessarily always know what to expect, you really didn't know what to expect watching a lot of this stuff. I was just so drawn in. Quick aside, 2 weeks ago or last week on the season finale of Chuck, which I know you don't watch, great Princess Bride reference.
Patrick, for the record, loves Chuck.
They're sitting in the back of a limo and their friend is driving and he says, Morgan, can you roll up the partition or whatever and just throw away? Morgan goes, as you wish. That's it.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, everybody watched Chuck.
Everyone watched Chuck and the Princess Bride, I guess. But just don't be a dick about the Princess Bride. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. And again, it's not my cup of tea in a lot of the fantasy things, but I to your point, I love the end where he's paralyzed. And it was, and Shadi even pointed out that it's just like, how kind of advanced was this movie to have him just like drag along and like, you know, not be able to do anything for himself. Right. And that's the climax of the movie. I don't know if that's the climax, but it's the end part of the movie.
It's funny and it's unusual. And what I was saying about that sequence is I love the way that first sequence where he has to go through each person. I love how even very early on it's that Inigo Montoya and Andre the Giant, you like them immediately.
Right.
You know, that the movie doesn't have to like try and sell you on any idea that they're actually bad guys, or it doesn't have to go too far and say like, but they're not bad guys, they're just in a bad situation or whatever.
Right.
It's just like little character things that they do. Manny Patinkin's whole like, I have to fight him with my other hand, otherwise it's not fair. And when he does that, like, I swear on the life of my father, you'll reach the top alive. Like, all that stuff is so kick-ass. I love it. I just think it's a really good movie and such a rare movie that has elements of so many things that all work. You know, we talk all the time about the ambitious failure and movies that try and do too much. And a lot of movies try and do so little. I mean, look at, like, Fast Five, a movie that I enjoyed, you know? Like, that movie... has nothing on its mind, you know? Like, right. it's a solid action movie, and that's fine, but that's it. That is the only level on which that movie works. And right. here's a movie that works on so many different levels. It's a good swashbuckler movie. It's a comedy. It's a romance. It's got great characters.
Speaking of comedy, though.
Memorable scenes and dialogue.
I was on some website today.
Yes.
And they were talking about all the different kind of lists this movie has made.
Yeah.
And it's on every list, basically. It's on, like, the top 10, the top 50, the top 100 of the year, the decade, whatever. And it consistently makes, like, the top comedies.
Which I don't agree with.
And, that was always the thing to me. It's like, the movie is funny.
Right.
But it's not funny. It's, right. You know, it's a funny right. movie. Like, there's never a moment that I'm laughing out loud, you know, right. or LOLing. I'm not right. ROFL.
Except for during the Miracle Max scene.
Yeah, well, that's gut-busting. That's yeah. so oh, God. I guess it's not a secret that I'm not a Billy Crystal fan.
Right.
He's not fun. He's not funny. The movie is very charming and sweet, and I smile a lot during it, but mm-hmm. it's never, I never, like, laugh. And that's part of it, too. It's like, so, I think people sometimes are trying to, like, shoehorn it because it's so beloved
right.
into all these kind of categories. Well, right. it's great action. It's great comedy. It's like, well, no, right. it's not like Robin Hood Men in Tights.
It's I don't think it's enough of any, while I think it's some of everything.
Sure.
Which is to,
and that's
it's the, credit.
It's the point, right.
I love it for that reason, in the same way that, like, Wizard of Oz is a little bit of everything.
Right. But Wizard of Oz is one of my favorite comedies.
Yes, right. Well, see, but it's not enough of any one thing, I think, to land on one of these lists that are qualifying a movie based on one aspect. You know what I mean? Right. Like, if it's a comedy, then you should probably just have comedies. I don't necessarily think that Princess Bride is a straight comedy, though it is funny, and it has a lot sure. of jokes in it, but they're not, you know, jokes in big quotation marks.
I would also
Caddyshack,
argue,
that's a funny movie.
I would also argue, and I guess this maybe flies in the face a little bit of what you said earlier, that it is definitely for kids. I think it's I don't know if it's necessarily, I could see how it's for everyone. It's definitely, it's PG. It's definitely PG. No, but by the way, being PG, to have the violence at the end,
yeah.
The stabbing of Inigo Montoya in his arms and his stomach, it's pretty graphic.
Are
they show blood.
Count Rogan, do you mean?
Hmm?
Count Rogan, do you mean? Well, and
no,
he gets stabbed.
Yeah, he gets stabbed right before he kills Count Rogan.
Yeah.
And it's, like, kind of shocking. And you think that, like, and I honestly, in real life, I don't think he could have survived, like, stab all that, like, right in the gut. But he's fine.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, wow. But it is this kind of movie that, like, and so we're, obviously, we've gotten away from that so much. Unless it's a Pixar movie, we, you know, and I mean that just in general, that kind of, like, animated movie. There's no movie for kids because it's either like there's got to be fart jokes, there's got to be just fart sound effects, not even fart jokes. And so it's definitely like a movie you feel comfortable at even today just putting on for your kids and like enjoy.
Definitely.
But I don't know if it's something like I don't just adults going to see a movie. I don't know. Like it just doesn't seem to me like a movie I'd put on again. I know that's definitely different for you, but again, it's not my cup of tea, and I guess that's what it comes down to.
I think it's for kids.
I do like Caddyshack.
I think it's for kids.
Caddyshack 2.
Back to the Shack?
With Jackie Mason.
And Jonathan Silverman and Dan Aykroyd in the Bill Murray role, I believe. I think it's for kids in as much as, like, fairy tales are for kids, you know, that there's just that anytime somebody tries to do an adult fairy tale, which I think there's, like, 5 in production right now.
Oh, really?
Just like, yeah, whatever.
Like what?
There's, like, 2 different Snow White movies, and they're all, like, adult-themed fairy tales. They're not going to work, everybody. Guess
it's
what?
It's like that Amanda Seyfried.
Right,
what's
kind
it,
of,
what was
yeah.
it called?
Red Riding Hood.
Right. He was afraid of the Big Bad Wolf.
Exactly. I wanted to call it Big Bad Wolf, but then this is the show where I've gotten everything wrong. And you've only gotten one thing wrong, which is your opinion of The Princess Bride. it's for kids in as much as it's a fairy tale, and that's for kids. But would you say, like, The Wizard of Oz is a movie for kids? I mean, I think that's the entry point, sort of, but I think that's a movie that works for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I totally
subscribe
to the notion that they're that comparable. I know that, like...
I only say that. I think Wizard of Oz is a better movie.
I know, and that's... You made that point
I just
earlier.
Think in as much as they sort of have a little bit of everything and work on each of those levels.
Sure, and to your point, you said even, like, Rob Reiner, they just compared it the two, but they said, like, it's not... They're not the same, obviously.
Right.
And So to back to support, so I don't look like a total fool. No, it's Wizard of Oz is definitely just for kids.
So would you put on the Goonies before you would put on the Princess Bride?
Yes.
That is going to blow my mind.
I would, and it's more about, because I think at this point, it's, honestly,
that's just for nostalgia.
Do
you think one is a better movie?
I don't have the same affection for Princess Bride, obviously, that you do, or every other 20-something, 30-something out there. All the things you said, I didn't have that experience. I did have that with the Goonies.
Okay.
I did watch the Goonies again, and while seeing the flaws in the Goonies, and there are probably more flaws in Goonies than there are in Princess Bride, I'm not bored by Goonies.
Take probably out of it. Well, no, you can't possibly be bored in Goonies, because they never stop shouting. And
I'd almost argue that Goonies is also like... thinking about
that's my Goonies.
You know, like talking about a story, like how I find the story of Princess Bride a little boring and a little traditional, even though it's under the auspices of being untraditional and cramming all this stuff in and having all these different angles from which the story is told. The story of the Goonies, I think, is more unique in a lot of ways. Just a treasure hunt. I know you can break it down to its most basic elements, obviously, and it's called a treasure hunt. But the journey along the way, I never quite knew what the end game was. Where in this movie, the end game is obviously the two romantic leads end up together. Inigo Montoya kills the guy who killed his father, and they get away, and they're happily ever after. And that's the point of a fairy tale, and I get that.
Right.
I
get that, okay?
By the way, it's our huge pet peeve when people say, I get that. Don't get me wrong. I get that.
Peter Falk even sets a lot of that up in the beginning, which I love, too, that he tells Fred Savage, like, Prince Humperdinck lives. He doesn't die at the end, you know, and they tell you that. They telegraph that very early on.
And I guess my point is simply that if you do a fantasy movie like this, in order to, because you know that it's obviously, you're not going to turn it on its head, and it's not, you're not going to, you know, have the lead die in the second act or third act. You almost have to have those kind of, bookends with Peter Falk explaining this, and that will make it acceptable. Right. But at the end of the day, it's still just, you know, I still know what's going to happen. If I doze out for 5 minutes, and I didn't, I woke up after 5 seconds, I don't have to rewind it and be like, wait, what's happening? Because it's like, of course, it's at this point in the movie where this happens. And my whole thing with Goonies, and I'm not defending Goonies or even comparing
them. A little bit you are.
It's just that I found it, like, even when I first saw it, and even like when I was a little more older watching it, knowing how it's going to end, it's like, how they got from point A to point B.
Answer was tunnels.
It was slides. A giant organ. And skulls and crossbones. That's a fun movie, and I would definitely put on Goonies for how it makes me feel before I would put on Princess Bride, because Princess Bride just makes me feel sleepy.
I understand what you're saying, especially as long as you qualify it as, like, Goonies makes me feel... It brings me back to watching it as a kid. You're making my throat hurt with what you're saying.
Yeah. Because I stung you.
Goonies, I get that it works for kids, and again, my reaction... watching it as an adult is, this works for kids. I don't think this works for adults, and I think Princess Bride works as a kid and as an adult, not just for the sake of nostalgia. I really was able to divorce myself from this movie that I loved when I was 10. I really think, as a grown man, that The Princess Bride is just a really well-put-together movie that achieves all of its goals and that has goals that include, you know, entertaining people of all ages and involving people of all ages, and I think the Goonies is very much pitched at 10-year-old kids.
I agree. I think Goonies is
why these two movies are. It's the only reason I'm drawing comparisons because we had done that podcast on the Goonies. The Goonies derivation, exactly.
It's Dawn.
Because otherwise,
what you're doing to us? You're tearing us apart.
Otherwise, the movies obviously have very little in common, except that people in our age group have equal affection for both. Yeah. You know, because in the same way that I am now. Like, what do you call that person who's, like, shunned?
An outcast or her?
Whatever. Yeah, an outcast, I guess. There's a...
shut in?
There's a word for what I'm trying to say, and I think it's special. Pederast. for not loving the Goonies necessarily anymore. So I understand your pain about
I'm
saying.
As you were talking, I was thinking, like, after this is over, and, you know, maybe talking to Mike or talking to someone who listens to the podcast, I imagine I will receive, not shit, but just a fair amount of, like, really?
How could you not love?
Like, really?
Right.
And I know that it's probably what you went through a little bit with Goonies, maybe not, but more so maybe with Top Gun.
I mean, well,
because people just are still nuts about Top Gun.
Right.
And that's a movie I still like, and I could still put on and watch, but I cannot defend it. I can defend Goonies, obviously, and Princess Bride, you don't have to defend because it is good. But Top Gun is something that I think people like, but they don't, It's that same thing we talked about with the fan base. It's the people that are nuts, so nuts about it that right. how dare you, you're insulting America, you know, when you don't like Top Gun, right. you know?
Which is ridiculous. I don't think anybody should be that way about The Princess Bride, honestly, but I do feel like it's a movie.
It is. Stop right there.
Thanks for listening. I do feel like it's a movie that is, like, objectively good. That I think, I feel like it's a movie that's hard to criticize. I understand you saying, like, it's not really for me. I found it a little bit boring. That's not the same as saying, like, that movie doesn't work.
No, I think the movie absolutely works because it can't not work with how it's set up. I
disagree. I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But I think, you know, a movie came out a couple years ago with Anne Hathaway, your favorite actress, called Ella Enchanted.
I didn't see it.
Exactly.
Is that the one with the black frog?
No one's talking about it, right? No one remembers it. It wasn't very good. Why not? It's a fairy tale that's set up in much the same way as The Princess Bride, you know? So I don't necessarily think that just the story
that Drew Barrymore?
No, that's Ever After.
Okay.
And that, what's your favorite line from Ever After?
I forgot.
Okay.
I know.
Let's say I'm Drew Barrymore, okay?
Okay.
And you are the actor Doug Ray Scott? I don't know.
It's all Doug Ray.
Yeah.
Watching Doug Ray.
I wish your middle name was Ray, so I can call you Doug Ray.
Me too.
So I'm Drew Barrymore, you're Doug Ray Scott.
Okay.
And I say something along the lines of, I shall wait all day. What would you say? Oh, no. I said your line. Shit. This is the podcast on which I destroyed everything.
I'm still, like,
you used to do this impression of the trailer where he goes like, I shall wait all day. I blew it. I said your line.
Can you plug in that right? That's just that sound effect right now in the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to.
What is her line that precedes that? I don't remember.
And I shall wait all day. That's what it is.
And she had a line leading up. I'm sure she said it with, like, sort of a lisp.
Maybe.
This.
When I step back and look at Princess Bride, it looks like a very it's very sound. It's a very sound movie.
Yeah.
It's very like you said, objectively good.
Yes.
To me, it never reaches great status. I know that's very different for you. It just looks like a safe kind of movie, just a fantasy that's like, it's perfect. On a rainy day, you put it on, you know, and you kind of do something else and walk back in the room or whatever else. I feel the same way about Goonies. I feel the same way about a lot of stuff. And that's why we've mentioned before on the podcast where we have expansive DVD Blu-ray collections. I've slowed down a little bit. You've seemed to have picked up.
No, that's not true.
Where, you know, you own great Criterion movies. You own great classic black and white Hollywood stuff, and you know,
but it's Friday night, and your wife's at a taping of X Factor, so you put on Punisher War Zone.
Absolutely,
right?
And I'll put on. I'm trying to think of an example that I haven't said before. Just a dumb kind of comedy, you know.
Yeah.
Dead Man on Campus, which is a bad movie, but I could sit down and watch, and it's so mindless and dumb, and it reminds me of college, you know. So.
Right. I think Princess Bride could have been just a safe movie. But I think it's a safe movie that is elevated by certain factors, like the performances,
absolutely,
the writing.
When you cast those character actors, I mean, they're so good,
right?
And even the novelty, like you said before, the novelty casting of Andre the Giant works because he is this gentle. By the way, he's 7 feet tall, or like 6'11" or 6'10". I know that in some scenes he's probably up a little bit to make him even seem bigger. But regardless, his head and his hands are still so enormous that it's like, it's jarring almost. It's shocking.
And everybody tells stories about how he just was the nicest guy alive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad that he couldn't, like, lift, his back was so screwed up, he couldn't even lift anything.
Couldn't carry Robin Wright Penn at that scene at the end. Right. Like, she was 100 pounds, I think she said, and he couldn't hold her. So I don't know how he slammed Hogan at WrestleMania 3. I don't know, okay? But he did it.
I'm not going to even fact check that because I know you're
Hogan
right.
slammed him. Maybe he didn't slam Hogan, but Hogan definitely body slammed Andre the Giant for the 1-2-3 count.
So you think Hogan's next? We've got Macho Man gone.
There is such a crazy percentage of, like, wrestlers that have died.
Well, of course,
unnaturally early, you know. But it's not always like,
well, Andre the
heart attacks, or right. I mean, Andre the Giant, you're not necessarily surprised. Or even if they have, like, a heart attack, you're like, okay, I get that because they put their bodies through such stress. I mean, it's like crazy random stuff too, you know. That's just,
well, even Macho Man's, it was a heart attack, which he might have. I mean, who knows if he would have lived from it? But he crashed into a tree,
right?
Which is just like, ah.
And he was from Downers Grove, Illinois, so he's
was he really?
Oh, sure.
I did not know that. Is his real name Randall Savage?
Randy Poffo.
Oh.
Brother of Leaping Lanny Poffo. Did you ever used to watch wrestling?
I did. Way early when it was like the cartoon and like Captain Lou and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I didn't watch it so much after like probably 1990.
Leaping Lanny Poffo reinvented himself as the genius.
You know, that's funny about wrestling is I missed
that we shouldn't be talking about it on Princess Bride.
I missed the first few years probably with like Roddy Piper. I missed more of that stuff, and then I kind of tuned out. And to me, that segment that I watched it felt like such a long time.
Yeah,
that
right.
It was probably like a year and a half.
Well, a lot happens in a year and a half.
But a year and a half when you're also when you're nine, it's like that's a ninth of your life.
Yeah.
Which is the title of
is the Princess. But let me tie it together, and then we'll end the wrestling conversation with Princess Bride. Is the Princess Bride the best movie to ever star a wrestler?
Hmm.
Or is that
Hell Comes to Frogtown?
Okay, that's up there. Rocky III, Hogan as Thunderlips. Suburban Commando, Mr. Nanny, Santa with Muscles.
What about the one with Suburban Commando?
the answer is yes. Princess Bride is number one.
I think, yeah, you can't argue that
They Live is a close second.
I would say Fast Five stars The Rock. And you.
Oh, good point.
You want to bring it up to like modern era.
Good, I forgot
The Tooth
about
Fairy.
Oh, yes. Tooth Fairy. The Rundown.
Scorpion King.
The Game Plan. All movies with The Rock. Stone Cold was in a movie too.
Yeah, he was.
The Condemned.
Oh, Jesus.
They go on an island and have to kill each other. It sucked.
Is there any other like marquee wrestler that's out like that is of The Rock's name recognition that
is in movies?
Yeah.
There's a wrestler named John Cena who's in a movie called The Marine.
Yeah, but you're right. But that's still
and 12 Rounds starring Tommy Carcetti as the villain.
There's something about Dwayne Johnson. He is very
he's great. Yeah, he's super charismatic.
It's like wow, what a
yeah.
He's handsome and strong and charismatic. So
you want to date him is what you're
well,
saying.
Well, I mean, Shoddy doesn't mind. I have a list and he's on it.
So the point is this: Doug hates the Princess Bride. So send all of your hate mail.
I feel bad
towards Doug to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com, and I won't even read it. I'll just forward it along because I know it's not directed at me. I love this movie.
Another example of a movie that I own and I watch way up more often than I would like a Casablanca, even though I do watch that. I try to watch that once a year. Or Citizen Kane, which
so
I want to watch more often. But
please, why?
But Lost in Translation was on HBO the other day, and that's a movie that I turned on and I'm like, well, here's my next hour and a half because I think that movie's so great.
I love that movie too, but I'm never compelled to watch it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's very much a mood piece for me where it's like, I'm in this mood and it's perfect. It satisfies it.
You've even rewatched like Marie Antoinette, which is another movie I really liked.
I've seen that probably three or four times.
I've seen it once and have never been compelled to see it again. I really liked it.
But see, I like to rewatch good movies.
Oh, right. What are your feelings about Punisher Warzone? Not The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren and not The Punisher with Thomas Jane.
I'm glad when I set you
Punisher
up for that,
Warzone.
You could have either gone make fun of Doug or make fun of myself. And you made fun of yourself.
Absolutely.
Well,
you listen.
Easily said, like,
I spent an hour.
Van Wilder,
I've spent an hour coming off awesome by liking The Princess Bride, so.
You can't throw me a bone because
exactly.
John Bailey Hunt is going to be very upset with me.
Exactly. So The Goonies derivation does not apply to The Princess Bride. That movie holds up.
Meh.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Doug, take us out.
Inconceivable!